In Western music, if you want to be happy, just play something in a major key. Think, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. And if you want to be sad, head to the minor key. Luli lulay, my little tiny child. Well, it's nothing new to anyone who's ever had their heart broken, is it? But a recent study at Tufts University's Music Cognition Lab suggests that the minor third doesn't just convey sadness in music, it does so in speech as well. Steve Paulson sat down with the study's co-author, psychologist Megan Curtis.
First, can you remind us what the minor third in music is?
It's, do you want me to sing it for you?
Sure.
With that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay.
It's just a combination of two pitches at a specific frequency ratio. And it sounds very sad. It's highly associated with sadness in music.
Mm-hmm. And why is it called the minor third?
That's just the musical terminology. Every musical interval has a different name. So there's a slightly happier musical interval that is just slightly larger than the minor third, which is called the major third, which is
Well, we actually have some examples of not just the minor third, but something else as well. Let's hear these, what we brought in on a CD.
So that interval is called the minor second, and it's used in music to communicate negative emotions. That's actually the interval that you hear in the Jaws theme, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's strongly associated with negative emotions. And in my research, I've actually found that it's used to communicate negative emotions in speech as well. We see that interval in the use of, it's used in the communication of anger, and it's also used to a lesser extent in the communication of sadness in speech.
Wow, so that's fascinating. So you really do see a link then between music and the spoken word.
Particularly in the communication of negative emotions. Not so much in the communication of positive emotions, at least not that my data has revealed.
Yeah, okay. Well, we have another example as well. Let's hear the next one.
So this is called the musical minor third, and in Western music, it's strongly associated with sadness. And in my research, I found that it's actually used fairly often in the communication of sadness in speech. Mm-hmm. So there really does seem to be a link between how sadness is communicated in music and how it's communicated in speech.
I want to come back to the speech in just a moment. But so do we hear this often in music? I mean, is this a sort of a common theme that you'll hear in a lot of different songs or instrumental pieces?
Absolutely. This is actually one of the characteristics that helps us discern sad music from happy music. This is a salient characteristic of the minor mode. And most Western music that we hear as being sad is actually written in the Western minor mode. So this minor third is actually a very salient property of music in the minor mode.
Okay. Now, you have also been doing research looking at the connection between the spoken minor third and the musical minor third. And let's hear an example of the way this can be said.
Let's go.
So what do you take away from that when you hear that?
Well, it's the same interval that we use in the communication of sadness in music. So to me, that says that there is a deep link between music and language and how the two domains communicate emotion.
So how do you go about researching this? I mean, particularly finding this connection between language and music.
Well, we know that in music, the pattern of sequential pitches plays a really important role in communicating emotion, and that specific pitch patterns are associated with specific emotions. So we know that in speech, pitch patterns also communicate emotion, but the knowledge base in that research is just not as specific. Until my recent study looking at this issue, we really didn't know which pitch patterns were important for communicating emotions in speech. So to examine this, my collaborator, Jamcha Barucha, and I decided to investigate whether people use specific pitch patterns in speech to communicate specific emotions, much in the same way that they do in music. And we found that they actually did. We had actresses record short phrases with different emotions, and they said very simple things like, let's go, come here, and okay. And they said them in a few different emotional states, communicating anger, happiness, pleasantness, and sadness. And then we ran acoustic analyses on the speech samples to identify a representative fundamental frequency for each pitch in the speech sample. And we assessed the pattern of pitches within each speech sample according to a musical scale of measurement so that we could compare the pitch contours that are emotionally meaningful in music to those that were used in our speech data. And we found that there were correspondences.
Fascinating. So do you think this is true, the way when people are talking, when they are sad? I mean, do they sort of naturally lapse into this minor third way of speaking?
There seems to be a tendency to do so, yes.
Let's go.
Okay.
Come here.
You know, when you're talking about sadness as it's associated with a minor third, it makes me wonder if it really matters what is being said. I mean, if I said, I love you in the minor third, would that be perceived as sad?
I think that it could be. I think that someone might say, I love you in the minor third if you're about to leave them, perhaps.
So watch out. No, is this only true in English, or does the influence of the minor third on language cross other languages and cultures?
That's a fantastic question, and I don't know the answer to that yet. My study looked at speakers of American English, and currently, to the best of my knowledge, no one has looked at other cultures to determine whether there are cross-cultural correspondences. I have plans to look at speakers of Hindi to see if they're using this same type of interval pattern, which would be interesting because their musical system is very different than Western music. So if we find a cross-cultural correspondence, then that would speak to the notion of whether this is culturally learned or whether there might be a hint of universality in the use of these types of pitch patterns.
Now, to step back for a moment, do you know why music and speech share some of the same patterns when expressing emotions?
There's this question between music cognition and psycholinguistics regarding whether music evolved from language or whether language evolved from music, or perhaps whether both domains evolved from a common ancestor.
What would that mean? What would that mean if language evolved from music? You're suggesting that people might have sung before they started saying words?
It's entirely possible. It's hard to reconstruct the evolutionary history. But I think that data like this that shows correspondences across the two domains can lead us perhaps on the right path or lead us to asking questions that are going to put us on the path of discovery towards maybe understanding the evolutionary origins a little bit better. I don't know if we'll ever really know the evolutionary origins, but I think that any correspondences that are noted across the two domains suggest that there is some sort of link between the two domains evolutionarily, and perhaps that they both evolved from a common ancestor. Particularly, I think that my data support this theory that they may have evolved from a common ancestor simply because we explicitly use these types of pitch relationships in music, whereas in language, our use of them is much more implicit, which to me suggests that they may represent a type of evolutionary vestige from perhaps an earlier system for communicating emotion that is not used with quite as much consistency in language, but is used with stunning consistency in music.
I wonder if it would be possible to even look at the way non-human primates vocalize, whether there would be any link to some of these emotions in their pitch patterns, chimpanzees or gorillas, for instance.
I've heard some really interesting vocalizations from macaque monkeys who, when they're presented with a type of food that they really don't like, they make a vocalization that to me sounds very much like a descending minor third, which is the same thing I'm finding in the sad speech samples. And when they are presented with food that they really like, they vocalize with a pitch contour that goes up in pitch, and it's certainly not a minor third. It's more along the lines of an octave. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of work to be done looking at vocalizations in other species as well, particularly species that make pitched sounds that are similar in that regard to the types of vocalizations that humans make.
Psychologist Megan Curtis talking with Steve Paulson about a study by the Tufts University Music Cognition Lab.